Warning. Critique Revolve contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
Life's not fair, is it, my little friend? While some are born to feast, others spend their lives in the dark. Begging for scraps.
Hello, everyone in Rain Man Digital listening land. This is Brian Smith coming at you with another episode of Critique Revolve. This week, joining me in studio is your favorite bearded ginger, Gregory Holmes.
Hey, everybody.
All right. So Greg and I went and saw a movie. It's the newest in the long line of live action movies from your favorite animation studio, Disney.
We went and saw the live action remake of The Lion King.
Right. And when we say live action, what we mean is CG filled, photo real CG.
Yeah, photo real is what they're going for.
Yeah, photo real is what they're calling it. And it's, you know, 118 minutes. It's rated PG and it is exactly what you think it is. It is the story of The Lion King or Hamlet or whatever you want to call it. And the synopsis is, after the murder of his father, a young lion prince flees his kingdom only to learn the true meaning of responsibility and bravery. What a crock of shit that is.
Well, I mean, it's exactly, you know, what the original was.
Well, I mean,
it's the same, and it's
so here's the thing. Like what you have here is Disney doing this thing where they take a beloved cartoon from, you know, your childhood, whether it be the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, it doesn't matter. And they put real actors in the roles, right? And for this one, it was a little bit different than what we've seen with Beauty and the Beast and Dumbo and
Cinderella.
Thank you, Cinderella.
And Jungle Book.
Right. The Legend of Mowgli, right?
Well, no, it was just the Jungle Book. Legend of Mowgli.
Oh, that was the other one.
Film.
Yeah, that was the better one. That's right. So what you have is, like, you know, those you actually have humans that you get to replace.
This was their first all, air quotes, animal feature.
Right.
They used what they're dubbing as photoreal CG.
Right. And we'll get into that here in a little bit. And so this one, it stars, it's what, Seth Rogen,
Billy Eichner, John Oliver, James Earl Jones, John Canny, Alfre Woodard. And then you have, of course, Donald Glover, Beyonce, Keegan-Michael Key. So, you know, it's actually a very...
Hold on, wait. You just completely glossed over Scar. Is it because his name? Is that what it is?
Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Yeah, okay, sure. That guy. So you've got a cast it's literally like a who's who of African American cinema. Right?
Right.
And then the Queen, Beyonce.
Yeah.
Right? And so this is what you get with it. It's directed by Jon Favreau because nobody's more in touch with the African American experience than that guy. And you guys know him as Happy from Iron Man.
He was also
the director of Iron Man. Yeah. I love Jon Favreau, like, to be honest. Like, that dude is one of my favorite people in the entire world.
He also does a show that he did based that he spawned off of his movie Chef, where he just goes around and...
Right. The movie Chef is fantastic. The show, not so much.
It is what it is.
The show's weak. Anyway, so that's not what we're talking about today, though. Today we're talking about The Lion King, and... For those of you out there that have seen the trailer, you know that this is about as close to a shot-for-shot remake as you can possibly get. That I think you could actually take every single moment in the trailer and line it up to the cartoon.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, there's
slight differences.
There's slight differences, obviously, but for the most part, it was a shot-for-shot.
Right, and so it's tough to do like a true review of the movie itself. We know the story. Right.
Everything plays out exactly as.
Well, hold on. We're going to get to spoilers in a second because, I mean, there are.
Well, I wasn't going to go into any spoilers. Okay. It plays out as if you've seen the original, it plays out like you think. If you have a young child who you haven't shown the original to, you know, yes, taking them to this will be something new for them. You'll just have to sit through and enjoy the little changes they make to it, and then just how really good the photoreal CG is.
Sure. And so I think what we're going to do today is we're going to talk a little bit about, I think we're going to go more technical with our review here. I think we almost have to, because the the differences between animation and CGI are actually pretty big. And I think that's one of those things that a lot of people don't understand, because a lot of people look at CGI as it's just animation with computers, but that's not at all how that works. Like, even remotely close. Right. And Greg, of course, I'm glad that you're here with me, because that is something that you actually do, is like the computer generated stuff. And you're also an artist, right? Yeah.
So I've done 2D animation before. So right. the difference is obviously vast. And
right. Because with computer generation, it's more like a 3D modeling mapping kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right?
So essentially to kind of quickly go.
Yeah, over, like, if you could just give us like a real quick rundown of how it works.
So with this, with their photoreal CG, what they'll do, what the artists will do is they will, a team will get, you know, one scene or one section of the film, and somebody will model, you know, whoever's in the film. So we'll say Simba. They get, you know, we're going to have, okay, you got to do adult Simba. How does a lion walk? How does a lion move? And in 2D animation, you just kind of draw it and you draw movement. For 3D, though, you have to not only model the character, but do what's called rigging, which is essentially like, if you think like a marionette, is you're attaching parts that will move when you click on it and move it within the computer. And so there's a lot more to it where you have to make sure everything flows and looks right. Whereas with the animation, you can get away with that with curves and how you draw the shot. Within CG, it's a little bit different because you are going more into, you know, how, you know, a real lion would move.
Right. And I know that like in the past, Disney has brought in animals when they're doing their animation and they're drawing stuff, and you bring in the animal so that you have like a point of reference, or you watch a video or whatever for your reference point. But with CG, it's a little bit different in that, like, for a lot of the CG stuff that you see with human actors, it's the green suit with the little balls on it, and the little balls are the points for the marionette. Correct. That's how that works. And so for those of you that have watched any special feature ever,
that's essentially what that's motion capture.
Right. So, but that's how,
but you that's can, essentially what it is, like the dots will essentially on the 3D model will show where it moves. So you have, you know, in Aladdin, where, if for those of you who've seen Aladdin, like where the points where, you know, Will Smith is moving a lot of, you know, even though he's on set doing it, they had the points there so that when they did the model, everything still matched up.
Right. And so it's like a point of reference is those points, right, so that when you're doing the CG mapping and all of that, it makes sense.
And there's
right?
still a lot to, there's still a lot that goes into it at, like, you know, in post and, sure, and everything like that to kind of make it still, to make it more fluid. And
right. It's super time consuming, just like regular animation.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, what is it? How many frames is it for every second? Or how many pictures is it?
It's usually 30 frames per second, between 24 and 30 frames per second.
So it's 24 to 30, like, drawn pictures.
Right. So you would actually double that, too. So you'd have the one picture twice. Because when I was learning animation, essentially when we did, like, just the basic, which is a ball bounce.
Right.
Is we would scan in everything we had, but then we would take each frame. So, like, frame one, I would duplicate that. There was one and so then one A.
Why?
It makes it a little smoother for 2D.
Oh, it's like a fill-in kind of thing?
Yeah, essentially. Okay. So it goes there once, so it's not just like a quick blurb.
Right.
It kind of fills it in, so to speak.
So it's like a half step.
Kind of, yeah. So
it's one and then like one and a half and then two and two and a half.
And then it moves to the next one, it goes down. So it just kind of makes it a little bit smoother. It gives it a little bit more time.
So then if you're doing 24 frames a second, you're looking at 48 pictures.
Essentially, yeah.
That are hand-drawn.
Correct.
Back in the day. And I it'd be
24 hand-drawn, and then scanned in, it'd be 48.
Oh, so you just scan the same one twice.
Right.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Now I understand what you're saying. You don't have to, like, duplicate
it by
hand.
No, it's just once.
My bad.
Then, okay. No, it's fine.
No, that makes sense. Okay, so then, like, on the original Lion King, was that hand-drawn? Do you know?
That's hand-drawn, yeah.
That was hand-drawn. What was the last movie that they did hand-drawn?
The last, I believe, I want to say Princess and the Frog was like one of the last hand-drawn animations.
Okay.
But I could be wrong. But that's the last one I remember coming out.
Okay. And that was what, 2000?
Let me see.
I don't remember. For those of you that don't remember Princess and the Frog, you're not alone. I know it's after 2005 because that's when my daughter was born, and I know she loved that movie.
2009.
Okay. So she was three or four when that one came out. That sounds about right. Okay, so what you have with Disney, obviously, guys, is you've had years and years and years and years to fall in love with these characters.
So real quick to jump off was...
Oh, sorry.
Princess and the Frog was one of the last ones. The other one was 2011's Winnie the Pooh that they did.
Oh, I forgot about Winnie the Pooh.
So, okay. Those are the last two that were 2D well, drawn.
Did hand. Winnie the Pooh have a full release in the stair?
I don't believe it. I don't think that was like a Disney exclusive kind of thing.
Yeah. Like on the Disney Channel. Okay. So either way, guys, with Disney, you know what you're going to get. You know, you've had, we know these characters. We know the characters of the Lion King. We know the Cinderella story. We know all of that. And what we've seen so far of the live action stuff is that they give you kind of a, it's similar enough that you can follow along with the story and you know the story, but they've changed certain things with a lot of them, you know, like just little bitty tweaks, kind of updating them.
Right.
Especially with, I think, Cinderella and with Beauty and the Beast, there was quite a bit of updating right. that went
and,
in there.
And in Beauty and the Beast, they included a song, I think, that was just for the film.
Right. Right. And they've done that a lot, too, because they all have singing. Right. That was the hallmark of Disney.
That's what Disney right? is known for.
It's not a musical, but it is. You know, like it's like a musical episode of, you know, it's a Joss Whedon television show, yeah. musical episode where there's some talking, but then it's about
and
the songs.
Singing and everything.
And I think Lion King is one of those where the original with the, you know, I just can't wait to be king and
Hakuna Matata.
Yeah, Hakuna Matata and Can You Feel the Love Tonight?
And then Be Prepared, which is sure. Scar's song.
Sure, sure, sure. But I want to say like those first three. Because like Be Prepared is one of those that like you'll know it if you hear it.
Yeah,
but you don't actively think about it.
You don't have to think about it unless like you're like me and you remember all these fucking soundtracks. So.
Sure, sure. And there's nothing wrong with that. I love soundtracks just probably more than the next guy. But I think with this one, this was a main this had mainstream success. You know, the Elton John songs were huge. I remember that because I was this came out in 94 was the original Lion King.
No, it was 96, I believe.
Was it 96?
Because it was after I had moved here to Arizona in 95. Okay.
So I was in either eighth grade or my freshman year in high school when that movie came out. Right. And I remember just the radio played those songs over and over.
Oh, no,
and
you
over.
Were right. It was 94.
That's what I thought. Okay. Thanks, buddy. So it was sixth grade or seventh grade. And I just remember that the radio, because, you know, sixth and seventh grade is when you kind of, I think a lot of kids get into music, right? And so for me, The Lion King was one of those things where I didn't want to admit how much I liked the songs, you know, because as a male in Indiana in sixth and seventh grade, or, you know, in 94, I would have been 12 going on 13.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm right at that cusp of like, I'm in middle school, but I really like these songs, but I don't want to admit that. Like, I'm supposed to like Nirvana. I'm supposed to like Soundgarden. I'm supposed, you know, shit like that, which is great music. And I love that too. And I don't want to take anything away from that. But at the same time, like listening to the Elton John songs on the soundtrack, we're like, oh my God, this is so good.
Well, that was one thing that Disney's always been really good about is their soundtracks and
for sure.
people to do that. So, you know, when you look at, you know, the original Lion King from 94 and the soundtrack and the people that were on that. So you had Elton John.
When that was one of the first ones that had like a big star do the soundtrack right. for the movie. It's like with when we talked about Aladdin.
Yeah.
And Aladdin had the original had Robin Williams. That was the first time you had a big star attached to an animated movie. And so Aladdin, of course, we talked about it during the Aladdin show, how that kind of opened the door. For what we've seen. And now, if you're not famous, you don't get to voice a cartoon unless you're a specific cartoon voice actor. Because there right. are, you know, Frank Welker, we talked about, and, you know, some of those people, and some of the anime people that do their thing, and some of the adult animation stuff, or Powerpuff Girls, and like those people, was right. Tara Strong. Like, there are those people that are known for doing those things. And that's great. You know, that's fantastic that you can kind of get that niche for yourself. But I think that when it comes to like the big pictures and the movies, almost always now there's someone famous attached.
Right. Well, because now it's that thing where, you know, they can put in a lesser known actor or actress, but you have where, you know, and I think with these live action remakes that Disney's doing is they want that extra star power people to go. And it's to see a change, you know, with Dumbo. You know, Dumbo they added a separate story.
They changed the all of Dumbo.
Well, yeah, everything about Dumbo was different because you had a more human element.
Well, you had to because and, like Dumbo the movie is about a drunk elephant.
Well, no, yeah, and so you have you have Colin Farrell and Michael Keaton in there, and so they have their story, and then Dumbo has his that intertwines,
right.
And so, but that, you know, Colin Farrell, Michael Keaton, that's the star power to go.
Of course.
Hey, you know, I remember watching Dumbo as a kid. Let me go check this out and see how it is. So in this case with Lion King, you have, you know, you have Beyonce, you have.
Right. But it's also different because you don't see these people.
Right. But it's the fact that their voices are involved. Right.
And it's so recognizable. Like, I mean, it was funny, Greg, you and I were sitting there and you didn't know Timon, which is Billy Eichner. And I remember I leaned over to you and I described him the only way I know how to describe him. And I described him incorrectly, but it was the same guy that in my head I knew who he was.
Yeah.
Right. I just didn't say it right. And I couldn't remember the guy's name, but I know he does like was it Billy on the Street or whatever?
I think so, yeah. That
weird little game that he plays, which is hilarious. But he is, I was amazed at his singing voice. I think that was the thing that really, really struck me about Eichner was that the dude can belt.
Oh, no. You know? And it was this is a small change. This is a change between the original and this one was that Timon did the bulk of the actual singing.
Right. Cause in the original it was Pumbaa.
Well, it was both of them. They both
sang in the original.
They both shared in it, but it was.
Well, and we'll get into some of that too here in a little bit. But I think that like just setting this up is that you've got, you know, we know what to expect from Disney. We know what we're going to get with the live action stuff so far. You know, I mean, I even said that I thought Aladdin was one of my favorite movies of the year. You know, I felt like Will Smith did a fantastic job as his version of the genie. I thought it was good. So going into The Lion King, even though I knew it was shot for shot, I love The Lion King movie. It was one of those things where watching that and like the scope of some of the shots that they used, even in the animation, like that, the opening sequence in that animation was so huge.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and there was, it was epic. Honestly, there's no other way to describe it. It was, you know, the reveal of the new prince, but the way they led up to it was like the sprawling vistas and all of the animals and everything else was absolutely amazing. And so seeing the trailer and seeing some of that gave me hope that this would be good. And so seeing that and then, you know, seeing the rest of the trailer and knowing that it's Donald Glover, who I absolutely adore as an actor, and you know, they brought back James Earl Jones, who's
I think that was a smart move on their part, was because for me, if they had cast somebody else as Mufasa, I would have just been like, well, it's not really the Lion King, because James Earl Jones, like, you know, granted he was, you know, he didn't have as many lines as everybody else, but it's his voice that gives those lines weight and depth, even though they're just, you know, like from father to a son. You know, it's just like if they, you know, if they're like, oh, like, hey, we're going to re-release Star Wars and we're going to redo Vader's voice with something different.
Right. Like
is Vader. James Earl Jones is Mufasa.
Right. No, absolutely. And I'll give you that. And I think it's, you know, it's one of those things where you look at who the original cast was and who the new cast is. And it's just, it's interesting. You know, because you've got, you have Nathan Lane playing Timon in the original.
And then Ernie Sabella
playing Pumbaa. You've got Moira Kelly as Nala and Matthew fucking Broderick as Simba.
Yeah.
Which I honestly, dude, I didn't even remember that that's who voiced Simba. Like, it did not register. Rowan Atkinson plays Zazu.
Yeah.
Which makes so much sense now that I think about what Zazu looked like in the animated show.
Yeah, it makes sense that, and you know, you move and you go from him to John Oliver and you see, you know, obviously, I mean, it's the photoreal CGI. So, you know,
but the thing is John Oliver looks a little avian.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean, is that they both have that look where the character is perfect for them.
Right. Exactly. And so it's interesting. And John Oliver does look a little bit like Rowan Atkinson.
Yeah.
Like, so I think it worked. You know, but I think that, you know, one of the things that, like I said, that Disney always has going for him is that you have like that nostalgic feel. And I think that going into this movie, I was cautiously optimistic because I am a cynical fuck and I don't like anything.
No, you don't.
And we all know, and we know that, you know, it's funny when we leave any movie and we have to give our little short little blurb to the girls that are standing there. And every single time they're like, okay, how much did you hate it? Like, that's literally what they say. Like, it's not even what did you think. It's
right.
How much did you hate it? How bad are you going to make fun of it on the podcast?
Well, and then she after you're done, she looked at me. She's like, well, I know Greg liked it.
Right.
You know, exactly. Cause they know I'm a huge Disney fan. Right. I'm just like,
it's funny though. Know. It's just funny that there's like that dichotomy between you and I, and like with Thomas, he'll like something and then he won't like something else. And it makes no difference. It makes no sense. Like with Thomas, I can't figure it out, but either way. So what you have with this though, is that we know that it's close to a shot for shot as it, as it can be. And so we know that the story isn't going to change a whole lot.
Yeah.
If at all. Right. And that's what we're looking at as we go into it. And so they open with that sprawling scene and absolutely amazing. And Rafiki comes out.
Does Simba, a little like, you know, right? Does a little thing, you know, across Simba's head, a little red line, like right. He's here.
Right.
He goes up and, you know, in the original, he stands up and he kind of lifts him up over.
Right.
And, you know, so he's like kind of like standing there. He's like, oh, here he is. Here he is. Oh, don't squirm, kid. Oh, dropped him.
Right.
And, yeah. You know, but then like now he just goes up, sits and lifts him up. Like, I can't stand. This kid's heavy. Here he is. But it's that shot for shot. But this right. time, and I even said it afterwards and you even echoed it, was it with the photo reel, it's so good that it to me, it just seemed like we were watching like a special episode of Blue Planet.
Sure. Sure. And, I mean, and that was, I know that is what you had said, but like for me with the photo reel, I think that in the wide shots or the shots where they're not speaking, it's great.
Oh yeah.
I think it looks fantastic. I mean, it's probably the best thing I've seen since A Scanner Darkly with the rotoscoping, which I fucking adore rotoscoping, right? Like, it's so great. But with this, it's like the opposite of rotoscoping. You know, like rotoscoping makes everything look like shit, and this makes everything look fantastic, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so we're sitting there, and as we're watching it, and there's a couple moments where, for me, on the technical side, I think my issue was that they made all of the eyes of the main characters, or any character that speaks, aside from the bird, too lifelike, too human. Like they gave them a, like, for lack of a better word, the eyes look like they have a soul.
They made them. They did, you know, they melded, like, you know, the eye of like the, whatever animal it was with that of a human,
right?
Like, with like the actor they're playing. So they're kind of trying to get that. Because if you go back and watch the original, they have, you know, the eyes are part of the main expression. So they're trying to, add to that.
Because the whole thing was like within the original, you had Scar with the green fire in his eyes and all of that stuff. And like, yes, the original cartoons were super expressive in the faces.
Which I think that's, you know, they were trying to bring that in.
Sure.
And also, too, with this new technology, they're like, you know, I think with this being the first full film of using this photo reel, you know, I think they went through, and I think this is going to be one of those, one of those learning points of like, okay, how did we do on this? Okay, everything else was really well.
Well, sure. It's kind of like that first Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Or any time, or like the first Avatar. Or Avatar, I guess. There's
yeah,
only been one.
Yeah, the second and third one aren't going to ever be out.
2022 and 2024. They're not going to come out. The Avatar, when they did all of the new technology, or even Titanic with the new cameras and all that stuff, the deep sea stuff, that was all great. And you're right, there is that learning curve that you're going to have. And so for this being the first one, the learning curve doesn't look like it's
not going to be that massive, because like there's little things they can change and then they have it.
Right.
And for me, one thing that I think that they did, what they tried to do, was stick within the anatomy of the animals. So like when they would speak, it wasn't so much where they changed the anatomy enough to where like they would move their mouth, like you and I talk, and how our mouth shapes and moves when we do the O and ooh and the ah, and like, you know, how we, those sounds happen.
For a lot of it, they use the lips to hide.
Yeah.
What the mouth would look like.
But like they did it within the muscle structure of the animal, of the lion.
I mean, that is what it looked like.
The hyena, and like, you know, that I think was that was really well done. They can easily translate that into like later, if they use it in later films, so that they don't have to, you know, so that way people don't sit there and go like, oh, I hope that animal they use on set is safe. They can interject this, and then it's just more of a matter of fact of.
So what you're saying is we're going to see far more animal deaths on screen.
No,
now that we have photo reel.
I don't think so, because people probably still make a sting about that.
I know,
but I think with the photo, with the photo reel, it's going to be kind of.
I think it does actually open up some doors, though, and it's kind of like the. And honestly, I look at the photo reel, and it just reminds me so much of the new deepfake stuff. Do you know what I'm talking about? The deepfake stuff, the face swaps.
No.
Oh, you haven't seen any of that?
No.
Oh my God, dude, it's fantastic. Because I mean, what do you do with that? Like, it's either porn or politicians, right? Those are your two options there. And so what you'll get is you'll get somebody who's doing like an impersonation of the president or of, you know, Obama or whoever. And they're doing an impersonation and they're saying all the things. And then they cut out that face and they deep fake it in, and the mouth moves right.
Oh.
And the really good ones are legit, like looks like it's coming from like a reputable news source,
right,
and the whole nine yards. And then of course with the porn, you can put whoever's face you want on that actress's body, right? And who doesn't want that all the time? So, but no, I'm just saying, like, it's very similar to that, because it is, so we've gotten to a point now where CGI and the photo reel and the deep fake stuff, it's all so good that it tricks the naked eye.
Well, yeah, and you have, and the things that, you know, where they've come with cameras and the technology itself is that, you know, what people don't really understand is that when you watch like the behind the scenes of like, you know, any movie, and they show like, oh, here's how we did the CG, and they show like the computer they're on, people are like, oh, that's just like my computer at home.
Not at all.
It's really not. Like there's, when I was going through school, we would hear about these machines called Fire and Ice. Like they're these specific machines for like rendering and modeling and things like that. And, you know, they're specified for that. That's all they're for.
Right. They can't do anything else.
And, you know, and a lot of, and, you know, like Pixar and Disney, even Sony, Illumination is like Sony's animation imprint. They have their own proprietary software as well. Pixar has RenderMan, which they've now kind of put out there for people to learn, which is their kind of like rendering and animation software. And so they're able to kind of tweak and push whatever technologies they've developed,
right,
for this. And, you know, what I think is great about this photo reel is that, you know, this will hopefully start, just on the sidetrack, start, you know, CG artists, you know, giving them, you know, studios that put their time. It's like the studio that did the tiger for Life of Pi.
Oh, right.
It'll give them, you know, it'll give like, hey, we can do this now. This is a viable thing. You know, it's kind of like not saying we're now worth what we say we are. Whereas like, you know, every minute the studio that did the Tiger for Life of Pi kind of got, well, they did get screwed out of a lot of money.
No, they got shafted. I mean, there's no other way around it. They absolutely got shafted. And I think it's one of those things where, much like how people don't understand what goes into making a movie, even people that make movies don't understand what goes into making parts of a movie.
Yeah, you never fully understand if you're not doing that part. So
right.
What I think Disney did with this Lion King and this photo reel is present an avenue of like, hey, we can make these films and do these things and we can make it as real as possible. And it's a viable, I don't want to say viable industry, but that's essentially what it's going to become, as a viable industry.
Well, it opens up doors, essentially, is what you're looking at. When you have a studio as large as Disney, who is, I believe at this point, the largest conglomerate of all media.
Yeah.
When you have a studio like that, who is like, yeah, no, this is legit. Well, it legitimizes all of it. You know, and I think that's a great thing for, you know, people that are in your position or people that do any kind of CG. And of course, you know, over the years, CG has gotten more and more and more acceptable.
Oh, it's gotten better, and it's got more acceptable. And, you know, some of the, what I really,
and honestly, I actually think it's too acceptable sometimes. And you know what I mean? Like,
there's
practical effects. There's something to be said for practical, effects.
And with this, you know, going back to getting back on the review of it all, was when we were watching it, you know, you were watching the film, kind of seeing how they did it and everything. There are points where I was looking at, okay, how did they, like, how are they making the paw move? Like, are they bringing it, you know, like if it's coming up, like, is it a fluid motion, not just like, you know, just right, like quickly going
is
down?
Is it a dead,
like,
fish, or is it a live fish?
You know, like, and like their runs and everything, and how each of the different animals acted,
right,
down to the movements with, you know, there's a scene like where it's like a little mouse.
A field mouse. It's a field mouse.
Yeah. Going through the water and getting wet.
That was amazing. Because that was the big thing, like hair and water and fire were the hardest things to do, right?
Yeah.
Because they don't act. There's no algorithm for how they act.
There's no algorithm for how they go. You can set parameters for how they move, but then sure, like you, when you're working with hair, and especially now that you're doing a full film where animals have fur, you know, Pumbaa has, you know,
he's
whiskers,
got his regular
and
fur, then his mane, then the
you know, then yeah, everything else, and then you have every animal that just has like their fur, their, you know, their hide, and a lot of times like that hair is like a, you know, it's patches of separate, you know, essentially separate effects, or, you know, separate parameters that they set along with each other to work.
Well, that was the whole thing with, was it Monsters, Inc. with Big Kitty?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that was the big thing, was it was all of his fur.
Yeah.
Was all individually rendered.
Yeah. And that's what the, you know, as a 3D artist is a bitch is, you know, excuse my language on a show talking about a Disney film, but it's a bitch to do hair. And that if you ever look at, if you look at video games or even, you know, just some, you know, CG shows or 3D animated shows, either they've animated the hair, they've taken the time to do it, and it's probably in parts, like it's big patches on the on the model, or it's solid and doesn't move, or especially for video games, if you look at the model, it'll be like a plane, a single-sided plane,
right?
And the texture, if you will, the color that shows the hair will be, you know, there'll be parts that are clear when it's painted, so that it looks like you can see through the hair. And so with this photo reel and how they did this, is I'm really excited to see, like, when this comes out on Blu-ray and DVD, what the behind the scenes is and how they did it, because everything in here is, I mean,
no, it all looks, you know, here's the thing. Visually, this movie is stunning. And even though it is CGI, it doesn't feel CGI. There are a couple moments. There's a couple scenes with especially baby Simba
where there's scenes
where it doesn't look right.
Where you see and you can tell that they're really pulling from the original animated.
Well, not just that. It's also like the way the animal looks is almost off-putting. Because it's just not right.
Right.
There's something wrong.
They have to add something to it to give it that
sure
feel like you know you're seeing this scene from the animated film being recreated
right
in a CG way, but also too it's also a photo reel recreation.
Right. No. And so, like I said, it's visually, you know, you still have the sweeping vistas. You still have the amazing elephant graveyard. You have you have more hyenas. Like a lot more.
They did. There were more talking hyenas. There were more hyenas that were characters than the original three in.
Well, you have the original three.
You have the three. They renamed them.
They did, but those are the three main ones.
And then you have one or two that kind of jump in, but you have more as far as, you know, that.
But the big scene, like the couple.
There's more to them than just those three or the extras that they had in the original anime. Right.
And not only that, but I want to say, like, the lionesses, it looks like there was the same amount of lionesses.
Yeah.
Right? Like, all of that stuff seems the same. Timon and Pumbaa, it's a different dynamic, I think, in this than what you had in the original. Because, like, in the original, they were the breakers of the fourth wall.
Right.
Right? They were the comedic relief in it, you know, which Shakespeare, of course, was super fond of. And so it made sense to have
those two. In this one, it's a little bit different where Timon has a little bit more than Pumbaa.
He does, but Pumbaa is almost just kind of like the fat sidekick at times.
Yeah.
It's kind of the feel you get from it. And of course, you know, because it is voiced by Seth Rogen, which is almost unfortunate. I don't know. I think he's funny. But I think that man cannot sing.
And that's the thing, like with the singing in this, everybody that does, you know, that does have a singing part, which is mostly everybody.
Well, I mean, aside from like Mufasa,
except for Mufasa, like and Rafiki, like they do a good job of having people that can sing. And then I think the dynamic where it changes, where, you know, Pumbaa is kind of that one friend that just shouldn't sing, but then, you know, they do, and you're just like, just stop. And then Timon takes over, and I think they kind of I don't want to say like changed Pumbaa's line.
Here's the thing:
they worked them into where so that you could talk sing.
So what they did was, I think they recognized very early on that Seth Rogen can't sing. And so they just went, you know what, dude, just kind of like sing songy it. It's fine. It's like, you know, you have that friend that kind of never, ever talks. They just, everything's a little bit sung.
Yeah.
And that was his singing.
Oh yeah. That's where they worked it, where it didn't sound like when you're, you know, if you know, you can't sing is when you're like, and it just breaks up.
And not only that, they also then played with that idea during the movie, which actually I felt worked out pretty well, in those scenes. But it was jarring the first time he sang.
Yeah, the first time he sang, you were just like, I'm like, oh man,
luckily he's
a funny voice for Pumbaa.
He is,
but as far as singing, it's just one of those things. I'm like, gosh, like they should have just had somebody that could sound like him but sing.
Well, I mean, but that's such a cheat.
But if they're wanting to keep that, then, you know, that's the route that they
But I thought that they did all right with it. And of course, they do break the fourth wall a couple of different times. I don't want to spoil that part, I don't think, for anybody that is going to go see the movie. Honestly, that's the best part of the movie for me, was that breaking of the fourth wall.
But they also, too, there's a part that they change, and it's not for the better. It's not for the worse. It actually works. And it's a nice replacement between them that they have in the original. And I think what they, what they do is the singing is changed based on the actors that are playing it.
For sure.
And I think one thing we commented is that, you know, we have Donald Glover or
Childish Gambino.
You know, Childish Gambino, you know, then they're doing his thing, and then, you know, he is.
Well, here's the thing. So Childish Gambino has a very distinct voice.
Yeah.
Right? He has a very distinct kind of style. It's a little bit like Scatman. Like it's a little out there, right? And it's I don't want to say it's effeminate because it's not effeminate.
No, it's, but it's also not,
style. It's very actually similar to Elton John.
Yeah.
In that it is a higher range
yeah.
than what you would expect. And but then the poor guy, again, and I feel bad because like when he sings by himself, you're like, oh yeah, this is good.
And then when he put him up with Beyonce.
And then Beyonce sings, you're just like, oh my God, he sounds like shit. And I don't care who she's singing next to, they're not going to sound good.
You're singing with Beyonce. That's kind of one of those things
fucked.
Like where
you're everybody's fucked.
Like, oh, Beyonce, oh, this guy's, this so-and-so person's doing a song with Beyonce. Well, no, it's the other way around. Yeah, whatever. Okay. Uh-huh. Whatever.
Yeah.
But, and it doesn't detract from it, but you can definitely tell, like, you're just like, okay, Beyonce's singing.
Right. It's almost like Diana Ross and the Supremes. How like occasionally yeah. Diana Ross would just kind of go off on a tangent and just completely overshadow all of the Supremes.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think that it was done on purpose. And I don't think that it was done maliciously, of course. I think it was just one of those things. It's the fact of the matter is that Beyonce is she's a generational talent. And Donald Glover is as well, but in a different way. You know, Donald Glover is generational in that he is funny, but he's also political. And he's uber talented, right? I mean, he's the triple threat kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And so, but so is Beyonce, and she just does it better.
It's not a dig
on him at all. Like, and I'm not saying that. It's just that it's just a little bit unfortunate because, like, even in like the original Lion King, when Elton John would sing, it wasn't. I never felt like it detracted from anything.
But you knew you're like, oh, Elton's singing,
right?
Like,
of course, and it's the same thing with like you said with Beyonce, like you know.
Yeah.
You know it's Beyonce. There's no question. And the same thing, though, with Donald Glover. When it's his part, you know it's him.
Yeah.
You know, because it does sound like him. And I think one of the things that they did change, they changed some of the dialogue in the movie. Actually, they changed a lot of the dialogue.
They did. I mean, but they did it to where...
It was updated. It feels updated. It feels fresh, honestly. It feels new because of the relationships are all still there. And it's the same relationships.
They just kind of change how they accomplish those.
Well, and my biggest gripe with it is that I don't feel like they actually developed any of the relationships the way they did in the cartoon.
No, they kind of...
I think the Nala and Simba relationship was, even though it was all done in like a 15-minute montage, was done better in the cartoon.
Oh, yeah.
And the reconnection was done better in the cartoon. And just for those furries out there, they do cut the sex scene. It does not exist in the new movie. I just want to let you guys know that it's not there. There's no sexy Nala looking at the camera.
Oh,
it doesn't happen.
But I think what they did when those changes that they did to kind of update it, or, you know, that they changed and took out, was they made it to where it wasn't, you know, Simba and Nala reconnecting and like, oh, well, I'm going to come back with you now. It was, she went looking for help. She found him after he had, you know, been presumed, you know, dead. And like, hey, this is what's happening. You need to come back. No, I don't want to come back. I'm happy.
Well, that was the same thing as in the cartoon.
Oh, yeah, no, no. But yeah. I'm saying his kind of reconnection was a little bit.
It was stunted.
It was stunted in the car. It wasn't as long in the cartoon. Whereas in the live action, he had more of a. He had more of where he's like, there was more resistance
to going back.
And he realized like, no, I need to go back. This is who I am. I need to go. I am. This is where I'm actually needed.
Well, I think it's one of those things where.
And it was also very rad. Like, you know, Yoda, Luke Skywalker type of, you know, Dagobah moment. I even leaned over and said, this is like, he's in fucking Dagobah, but you know, in the African jungle.
And here's the thing. Like, I think that the other thing that you have with the Simba character is there is a distinct arc for the character, which I appreciate. And you see more of, cause like in the original, it was like, they have their frolic. Right. And then she's like, we need to go home. You need to come with us. This is what's going on. And he's like, okay, let's go. In this one, there is hard pushback.
Oh, yeah. He's like, no, like, I'm happy here.
Right. This
why
is what
I
want.
Go
why
back?
Why like, would I go is... back? They don't need me. They're fine. Everything's no. fine.
He's like, Kuna Matata. What means don't worry. I'm fine.
Yeah, right. Exactly. He's being kind of a dick. And she calls him on it.
Oh yeah.
And you know, then the story, of course, I mean, he can't stay away. Like that's, and it's got really nothing to do with her. He realized that he is his father's son.
Yeah. And that his father has always been there with him, and he has right. that. And that moment is there, like, you know, from the original where like his yeah, dad dude, talks
that
is, to him.
That fucking moment. I swear to God, it makes me cry every fucking time.
And it's one of those things like where like they change this part of it, but it works for essentially this version of The Lion King.
Well, and like I said, I think that there are things that work very, very well in this, but I think there are also things that are just like glaring awfulness. You know, it's just off. The whole thing is just off. And I don't know if it's, you know, the people they chose to be the voice actors. I don't know if it's because of the photo reel CG. I don't know if it's because of John Favreau's directing. I don't know what it is, and I can't put my finger on it. But as I was watching the movie, it just didn't give me the same feeling that I got from the original. And maybe, and honestly, this could be it, that it's just I'm a jaded, cynical fucker now. And so I can't get that same feeling
because you're kind of past it.
I'm not 12 years old.
And you have like, this is my memory of it. And this right. is what I'm going. Right.
And so of course my memory of it is, you know, this is one of the greatest Disney right. movies of all time.
I think this too is, you know, whether it's, you know, is I think with, you know, whether it's the directing, you know, going like, okay, like you, and I've thought this with all the live action remakes, even the ones I've liked down to the ones that, you know, I thought like maybe, you know, this wasn't like, there were cool parts, but it was, I don't think it was executed very well. Is that whoever's put in place of directing these is tackling an iconic film, whether you want to, sure. whether you agree with me or not.
No, you're absolutely right.
All these are iconic films.
I mean, yeah. You look at Dumbo, Beauty and the Beast,
Jungle Book, Cinderella.
You have, these are the tenets of Disney.
You know, these are things where it's like, okay, here are these films. And, you know, it's like, hey, we're going to do live action remake. You're going to direct it. You know, and I think and I even said this in my review of Dumbo was, I felt that, you know, Tim Burton, everybody knows who Tim Burton is. Tim Burton has his style, but given like, hey, you're going to direct Dumbo. We want Tim Burton to direct Dumbo.
Well, it's the same thing we said about Aladdin.
I think he kind of played it safe. He didn't try and do too many Tim Burton you know, things in Dumbo, and I felt that he played it safe because of the source material.
Well, and the intended audience, I think also.
Well, yeah, and I mean, the intended audience, like, he doesn't want to scare kids with Dumbo.
We also know how much Disney interferes.
Well, and that's the other thing, too, is that they have, you know, they're going to go, okay, this is what you want to do. How about we do this?
Right.
Or, you know, hey, we're not going to do that. We want you to kind of, you know. So I think any director that takes one of these films and, you know, the upcoming, you know, Little Mermaid and Mulan are, you know, are other prime examples, because you have Little Mermaid, which is in itself probably one of Disney's more iconic films than the other ones.
Oh, for sure. No, absolutely. I think everyone knows who Ariel is.
Right. And so you have that, and then you have Mulan, which was, you know, essentially like Disney's first, you know, that was their first, you know, here's our first Asian Disney princess. Here's this, you know, kind of the first strong woman character, essentially.
Sure.
And so you're going to have these where people are like, oh, it's not like the original. It's not like this. But they're taking on these iconic films and having to make something successful out of it with people already making judgments. And the movies aren't even Little Mermaid hasn't even started filming.
No, and everybody's already shitting all over it. But that's not necessarily because of the director.
No. There's other reasons for it. But yeah, again,
racism. The reason is racism, Greg.
That's essentially, it is racism. But my point is, any director taking on these films is going to have to try and, not only like try and stay away from doing a shot for shot, or, you know, if they do a shot for shot, how can I, you know, tweak it enough to where it's a new experience for people that have already seen it.
Right. And what I'm saying is that what they tried to do with The Lion King, and yes, it was shot for shot, just about. And the tweaks they made, I don't think made the movie better.
No, that's what I mean. For me, it doesn't seem like anything new or different.
Right. It didn't add anything to it. And honestly, if anything, it detracted a little bit for me personally. But once again, that could just be that I'm remembering the feelings that I had as opposed to actually experiencing them.
I'm not trying to defend and say, you know, a little bit. My thing is like, my whole thing is, has ever been with films, is people making a judgment before the film is out. Whereas when you and I go see films, okay, what did we think of it? What do we pull from it?
Sure. Well,
and I love Disney films. I'm not right. gonna. Like, that's never been a fucking question on this show,
right?
But my thing is with this one, it didn't feel like a new. It just felt like, okay, cool. I've seen a live action Lion King.
Well, and I think part of it too is that like we just, you know, the last one we saw was Aladdin, which had some sweeping changes that were amazing.
But I think too, with it being Guy Ritchie, he was able to, I think they gave him a lot of.
He had, well, and I don't know how much leeway he had or if it was.
But he was able to kind of pour a lot of his touch into the film.
I think he fits better in the mold than like somebody like Tim Burton.
Right.
And John Favreau doesn't really have a touch.
He.
To me, I mean, I know he did like Iron Man and Iron Man 2, and he did Chef, and he's done some other movies, but
like I feel he's more on the, like he's really more attuned maybe to do a superhero film.
Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be a super. Here's the thing: it's either a superhero film or an everyman film.
Well, that's what I mean. Like he has his niche,
right?
Whereas I think with this, they're like, hey, you know, John, you want to do Lion King, and you know, he's like,
wait, yeah. How do you say no?
Like, yeah, well, you don't because, right. I mean, you know, Disney has been his bread and butter. I mean, that's
for 20 years now almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think where this falls for me as far as all the live action Disney films is right above Dumbo. And Dumbo is at the bottom of my list because of how they did it. It wasn't great. I enjoyed what Tim Burton tried to do. The one scene that I really liked was the pink elephants on parade. The way they redid that scene was fucking awesome.
Okay, I think that's fair. So, I mean, that's what I mean. It's like, I think there are, and that actually, the pink elephant scene is Tim Burton.
Right. And like, that thing, like, and even if you look back at the, even if you see the new one, then you go watch the original, you can see that even back then you're like, you know what, would be really cool to see if what Tim Burton could do with this scene. And right. we did. And he did something really amazing with it.
Sure, of course, but I don't feel like in Lion King, to get back to that, none of that was there.
That's what I mean,
because Guy Ritchie had his moment,
right,
and Tim Burton had his moment.
But I think with John Favreau,
there isn't a moment.
He stayed with, okay, I'm making the Lion King. I've got to change some parts to kind of fit into a longer film with what I'm doing. I hear those. Okay, we're done.
No, and that's exactly right. It's like he followed the script and just like added in whatever they had cut. It's kind of what it is.
Or added in what he needed to kind of extend a little bit of the film.
I'm just saying like what they had cut. No. Like it's the same kind of thing, you know?
Right.
And so I think though, obviously this is a technical marvel, I think. And I think that from a technical standpoint, this might be the most technical movie we've seen all year.
Oh yeah,
I mean across the network. I think this is the most technical movie we've seen. It had the most, and the budget wasn't crazy.
No,
it wasn't a crazy budget. It was, and the voice actors were fantastic. I think everybody played their part the way they're supposed to.
On a technical side, it was a great film.
Right, exactly. But I think from a storytelling standpoint, it was a little weak, and it wasn't. I don't necessarily think it was as bad as what a lot of
people say it is.
Of what we've been reading. I don't think it's that bad. But I would not call it. It's nowhere near Aladdin. It's nowhere near.
It's nowhere near Beauty and the Beast. It's nowhere near Jungle Book.
Right. Those were still iconic.
Right.
They were still iconic. And if not as iconic as the original source material, but still iconic, like right. Just
they
a
did,
notch
they,
below.
They did a good job.
They were
job
a notch below. They were a notch below. Dumbo was several notches below. And I feel like so was this. And it has nothing to do with the actors they chose, because I think they cast the movie very, very well. I think it's cast very well. I think that Favreau as a director is fine. I think he's fine as a director.
It's just this was one thing where they remade it to kind of add it to that
This gave me the why. Why did you remake this? Because because everything else felt a little different.
Right.
I felt a little different.
This film was a way for them to fully try out making a film using this new photoreel.
But if you're going to do that, don't do it with something like this. Do it with Lady and the Tramp.
I can see that. Or Oliver and Company.
Or even 101 Dalmatians.
You could do that. And see, that's the thing.
Although we've already had the live action 101 Dalmatians. Okay.
But with this, though, I think they looked for a film that.
Or the Aristocats.
I don't know if that movie could be made in this day and age without changing a lot.
I love that movie though.
The apartment band scene would be completely different.
Oh, it'd have to be.
So it'd be if none of you seen the Aristocats, not the Aristocrats, the Aristocats.
Yeah.
Go watch it. You'll understand what we mean by the apartment scene.
Here's the thing. The Aristocats is honestly, dude, it kind of shaped my childhood, which is not a good thing. It really isn't. That movie is super inappropriate.
Oh, no, it's but that's the
but
thing.
But I loved it
during that time. That was kind of what it was fine. So but like with this film, I feel this film was a way for them to kind of see how far they could push this new technology.
Sure. And I
feel like that's why it was a shot for shot. Was like, hey, you know what? Just recreate the film, you know, add in what you need to make it a little longer. But this is what we're, you know, kind of what you're tasked to do.
I mean, it does clock in it right at 2 hours, which is long.
Right. So that's what I'm saying is that they gave him, hey, here's the source material. You're going to just remake this, but add in what you need to make it this long.
Sure. So I think what we're going to do at this point, guys, is we're going to break down the new Rain Man Digital Review score system. This is something that we actually put a lot of thought into. We've decided over, you know, the course of doing these reviews for the last 6-7 years, especially Thomas and Michael and myself, we sat here the last time that Thomas and I saw a movie and we were in studio and the three of us kind of sat down and we were like, okay, how can we, you know, we don't always agree. We rarely agree with the IMDb score. We don't like the way Rotten Tomatoes is either. It's certified fresh or absolute trash. There is no in between. And then you look at like Metacritic, and Metacritic is so specific because it's just critic scores. And so it's tough to actually get like a real feel for how just a normal Joe or even a reviewer who doesn't have a fucking stick up his ass is going to feel about a movie and think about a movie. So what we came up with was kind of our own scoring system that we are going to implement across all of Rain Man Digital. So it's going to encompass our television shows. It's going to encompass comic books. It's going to be for Comic Book Chaos. And for those of you that aren't Patreon subscribers, we did just release a new Comic Book Chaos earlier this week. And it's a good one. It's Superman Year One, Frank Miller. You guys should really subscribe to the Patreon so that you do get that extra content, because it's just as good, if not sometimes even better than the content we put out on the main page. But either way, so this new scoring system is kind of a way for you guys as the fans who we know think very similarly to the way we do, otherwise you wouldn't listen, can kind of get an idea of what all of the hosts think of something. It won't just be like, because obviously for this movie, Greg and I are the only two that have seen it so far. But going forward, you're going to get two different reviews, or two different grades, I guess, for the movie. You'll get the grade from this show, which is the early review, the like first thoughts, the initial thoughts, and then the rest of the hosts that see the movie, as they see the movie, will then also grade the movie. So it'll be like an aggregate score, right? And not only that, we're going to go back in time and we're going to review older movies as well to give you guys a full database of things that you should watch and what we feel are must watch kind of movies. And so to start it off, we're going to go through and I'm going to break down the score system for you guys, because it's a little bit, it's got four tiers is how we're going to do it. We had to break it into four tiers because we felt like everything else out there doesn't do the tier system justice, right? And so what you get is you have, for us, you have the Critique Revolve score is going to be the scores of the hosts who reviewed the movie, like I said. And then the Rain Man Digital score is the score of the network members who also saw the film or the television show or whatever. And it's going to be an average score, much like they do with Metacritic, IMDb. So it's not a huge departure. It's what you guys know. But the scoring scale is going to be a little bit more fair and a little bit more clear.
And it's coming from the assholes that you know and love.
Exactly. And so without further bullshit, here it is, the score system breakdown. So we're going to start at the 1% to 40%. Obviously, these are movies or an episode or a comic book that deserve to be bent over and just, as we say, get fisted for the lack of effort, the lack of care.
If you can't feel Tony's touch in this, then
the shit story, the shit visual effects, contrived moments, just generally wasting everyone's time. It's the kind of movie that you go to and you're angry when you leave. Everyone would be better off if these movies, episodes, comics, books never ever existed. Something like Hellboy 2019, Jurassic World 2, The Fallen Kingdom, or the SPN episode Bloodlines. These are the 0 to 41s, and those are going to be what we call our thumbs down is not a thumbs down.
It's a straight fisting.
It's a get fisted, okay? So then we have 41 to 70%. This is the thumb sideways, kind of like Gladiator, you know? It's, and as I'm wont to say, you know, that category is called, it's a movie. right? So these are movies or episodes, whatever. They range from, you know, generally likable for certain audiences, you know, not bad and generally inoffensive, barely passable, or they're simply not bad, but just boring. Think something like, what is it? I can't remember the name of it now. Oscar Isaac's, I hate the movie. It was so, thank you. Inside Llewyn Davis, which for me is a 1 to 40%, but I think most people would just say it's a movie. Either way, the scores at the lower end, of course, the 41 to like 50, 55% have a number of issues, but nothing that makes it terrible. While higher scores in this range, they make a few fatal flaws that have kind of kept the movie or the show from being great. Examples would be something like Dark Phoenix, Captain Marvel, Glass, Pet Sematary, The Dead Don't Die, most of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies that Thomas loves so much, and Bohemian Rhapsody. Those are your 41 to 70. So these are movies that are, they're fine. They're just, it's a movie.
It's entertaining.
From 70 to 90%, you get the thumbs up or the hells yeah, right? And these are genuinely good movies or episodes. And what isn't perfect about them, it doesn't take away from your enjoyment. It's great dramas, the summer blockbusters, big budget comedies, horror, television, doesn't matter. They're well made with great stories, visual effects. And you can tell that there was a true passion from everyone that was involved in making, you know, the entertainment. The lower end of the spectrum is going to have some more issues, obviously, than the higher end. But they still provide a good experience experience for everybody and are just flat out fun. So examples of those would be something like Toy Story 4, Avengers Infinity War, the Lego Movie, the second part, How to Train Your Dragon, Black Klansman, and Mission Impossible Fallout. Now, at the top of our list, these are the Devil Horn movies. These are the kick-ass movies. These are the movies that get near universal acclaim. We're talking a movie that comes out once every 5 years when the planets align and the gods deem us worthy. It's a movie or an episode that's of a caliber that just, it graces us with its presence. It's something that everyone should see. And even if they're not fans of that type of show or movie, it's from truly great films to amazing popcorn flicks, to the top episodes that, you know, you share with everybody when you want to get them into whatever show you're watching. You want to get them hooked on it. These movies and episodes kind of remind us why we do what we do on this network as reviewers and as for lack of a better word, honestly, connoisseurs of entertainment. Movies in this genre would be something like, or in this level would be The Godfather Part 2, 12 Years a Slave, The Good, the Bad, the Ugly, the original Jurassic Park, and of course, Into the Spider-Verse. So that's kind of the breakdown of what we're going to do here for, I think, going forward on the review system. And of course, this will all be posted on RainmanDigitalMedia.com so that you can see it there. And so, Greg, for The Lion King, 0 or 1 to 100%. What do you give it?
As a whole, it's a movie.
It's a movie. So what's the percentage though? Is it percentage?
I'm gonna go with 70% because
it's right at the cusp of being a hell yeah.
Because that is the visual effects is what.
The visual effects push it over there for you. So the greatness of the visual effects kind of make up for the lack of originality, the lack of change to the story, or the change that does happen that kind of detracts from the story.
The photo real CG is what does it.
I think that's fair. I think for me personally, because this movie actually leaves a bad taste in my mouth after watching it, but I won't go as far as saying that it should get fisted. I don't think it's that bad. The visual effects are, like I said, absolutely amazing. It is a stunning piece of cinematography. So for me, I give it a 60%. It's a movie. If you're a fan of Disney, you're going to want to go see it. If you're a fan of The Lion King, go, you'll love it. If you have little kids, take them with you. Little kids like animals. It'll keep them busy for 2 hours. It's hot as shit right now all across the world, thanks to global warming. And
that's a myth.
And it's, thanks to climate change. And, it's air conditioned in the theater. So go spend 2 hours. You know, you're not going to feel bad about spending 2 hours in the theater watching the live action CG, whatever you want to call it, Lion King movie. So that gives us a Critique Revolve score, because we do average them together. Greg, you gave it a 70. I gave it a 60. It gives it a 65, which is at the higher end of the, it's a movie. So it's not Get Fisted, but it's also not hell yeah. It's just a movie. It's decent. Y'all will enjoy it if you go see it, I'm sure. So So, you know, take a Saturday matinee. Don't take a date.
Either a, you know, either a Sunday in the morning when it's cheaper.
Sure, that's what I'm saying. You go to the matinee, you go when it, the Wednesday, the $4 Wednesdays or whatever
Tuesday,
your theater
or
does.
Tuesday, $5 at AMC.
Sure, right, exactly. Something along those lines. That's when you're going to want to watch it. So I think with that, we're going to say good night and good luck. Greg, thank you for joining us today in the studio. You. We appreciate it. Remember, guys, this has been Critique Revolve on Rain Man Digital at rainmandigitalmedia.com.
The Corova Milk Bar sold Milk Plus. Milk Plus Velocet or Synthomesque or Drencrum, which is what we were drinking. This would sharpen you up and make you ready for a bit of the old ultra-violence.